How much of this, first of all, how much pressure is on the front office that this team get off to a decent start? You think, I mean, are they on the hot seat?
Adams gets fired right away. Jarmo Kekäläinen would be your GM quickly if they get off to a bad start. You know, they need to have the kind of start they had last year. They started 0-3. That caused a lot of panic, but they figured it out. They were in a playoff spot at Thanksgiving, which everybody forgets.
This episode of Nuff Said with Bob Kuczynski is sponsored by Chef's Famous Italian Restaurant, home of the Spaghetti Parm and located at 291 Seneca Street in Buffalo. It's time now for Nuff Said with your host, Bob Kuczynski. The topics are the Buffalo Bills and, yes, the Buffalo Sabres. Bob's guest is Mike Harrington, veteran columnist for the Buffalo News.
Welcome to another episode of Nuff Said with yours truly. And I have one of my favorite writers, Mike Harrington, who not only covers the Buffalo Sabres, I know he's got some thoughts on the Buffalo Bills, but we're, fittingly enough, we're in the French Connection room here at Chef's Restaurant, which is our sponsor. And I mean, you could spend, you know, more than a couple of minutes just looking at all these great photos. So I want to give a plug for Chef's. If you'd like to have a lunch or dinner with your family, with a group of people, the French Connection room, if you're a hockey fan, you can't beat it. So come on down to Chef's and call the number that's on the screen if you want to reserve the room.
I don't know what's my favorite here, Bob. I've done a quick look. I've been in this room before, but it's a treasure trove, as they like to say. Yeah.
Louis Billetier absolutely has a connection, no pun intended, with the French Connection Chef's. All right, Michael, you're one of my favorite writers. First of all, I have to publicly thank you. A couple years ago, you wrote a tremendous article on the Empire Sports Network. And it was great, and it gave a lot of people a chance to reminisce. And I bring that up because on the next episode, none other than Howard Simon and Brenda Lacey are going to be on the Nuff Said podcast.
Wow.
To talk about Fan TV, the creation of Fan TV, what it was, what it meant to the region, and that whole thing. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun because, you know, believe me, I've learned firsthand, there's a lot of people in this community, the younger people, who have no idea what we're talking about. So we'll school them a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, and the one thing we should say right at the top here, Bob, is I think sympathies to the family of Art Wander, your tremendous friend, my friend, and the number of times I was on Art Wander's radio show, on Fan TV with Empire, on Pros and Cons. Remember Pros and Cons?
Absolutely.
What a show that was. You know, so when I heard of Art's death, I was certainly sad, but what can you say about Art Wander? A life well lived and just an amazing personality. And you know what struck me when you find out Art Wander passed away in 97? That's when you get the perspective that all the shows he did during the Stanley Cup Finals in 1999, where he would be on the air all day between radio and Empire and Fan TV starting at noon, he was 71 years old when he was doing those shows. Just an amazing
career. His stamina was incredible.
It was.
It really was. And I have been gratified by the outpouring of affection and admiration for the career he had, because I got to be pretty good friends with Art. And not everybody got Art. One of the guys who didn't completely get Art was your buddy, Alan Pergamon, who called me the other day. And he said, well, he really didn't know sports. I said, well, he certainly knew enough sports to do a 4-hour call-in show.
He knew radio and entertainment.
Yeah, he knew.
Right.
You know, that was Art. Art knew to do something in this town. You know, he came back to Buffalo, and they put him on 1400 AM. At the time, it was WGKT. And I mean, it was the middle of the afternoon. So he knew he'd have to be outrageous to get people to, first of all, how do you find him, number one? The first time I discovered him, I was in my car. I was a sports director at Channel 7. And I love to scan the radio stations when I'm driving around. And it stopped on this, I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a polka show, I swear to God. And because I heard this guy talking, but there was a woman on the phone with him. Turned out it was Art's mom.
Ugh.
At the time, she was in her 90s. She was calling to wish him a happy birthday. This was in November. And you could tell Art, believe it or not, was embarrassed that his mom was on the phone. He was trying to kind of politely get her off. But anyway, no, I'm glad you brought it up. Art had a great career. He meant a lot to the sports community in this town. Whether it was on radio, whether it was on Empire Sports, he was also on WNSA. So a life well lived, a life well lived. All right, Michael. So they're closing, they're tearing down, they're shutting the doors to Highmark Stadium. And it's interesting because I saw a piece with, I think it was Terry Pagula the other day, and he talked about how, you know, it was Rich Stadium and then it was Ralph Wilson Stadium. It's gone through a few name changes and a few renovations. What are some of your memories of Highmark?
Well, it's interesting because I wasn't the kind of person who grew up here and went to a million Bills games. It opened in 1973. I was never in the building until 1980. The first time I went there was a high school game. I went to Sweet Home. They were playing in the sectional games. They got killed. They got rolled by Frontier. And this dude is running up and down the field. Who is this guy? Turns out it was Ron Wolfley, who ended up in the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, had a career in the NFL, became a Pro Bowler for the Arizona Cardinals. But over time, the biggest thing you remember, obviously everybody's going to talk nowadays, it's recency bias, the whole Josh Allen era. And there's been unbelievable games with Josh Allen. But there have been unbelievable games in that stadium for 50 years. And, you know, you saw most of them, except if the blackouts gotcha, you know, early on.
People forget about that.
People forget about the blackouts. The famous Ahmad Rashad Monday night game in 1974, blacked out. The comeback game against Houston, blacked out. The fans are what you remember. You remember, to me, I know people, what's your favorite game? Oh, it's Josh's perfect game. It's the Raiders game. It's the comeback game. No, there's nothing that comes close to 51-3. You know, forgetting that it was the first time the Bills were going to the Super Bowl and you knew it at halftime. Just the fact that where was the country at that time? It was the first event in the country after the war had started.
Right.
So no one really knew what was going to happen. The Bills took
Desert Storm.
Right. Desert Storm in 1991. That was the first time the Bills go to the Super Bowl. You could remember Van Miller on the radio and how many times it's been replayed. It took 25 years to get there, but the Bills are finally going to the Super Bowl. It felt like an impossible dream had been reached. So to me, that's the number one thing that comes out of that stadium. But there's been so many things. A lot of people's memories are in concerts. And especially early on, 70s and 80s. And then, you know, I'm one of the few people, there's a few of us out there, there's some fans probably too, we had the two outdoor hockey games. Obviously, the Sabres-Penguins is a massive moment in that stadium's history. And don't forget USA-Canada at the World Juniors in 2018. Not as many people attended. It was also a great game. We thought, oh, this Mittelstadt kid looks great. Let's get him on the Sabres right now. You know, but there were guys on the ice like Matthew Tkachuk and Adam Fox that day. So, you know, we're not sad, though, Bob. The memories will always be there. I feel a tremendous sense of sadness when the Odd closed. There was even sadness when the Rock Pile closed in 1987 before he went to Pilot Field. I think in this case, the sadness is for the memories, not the building, because I think people in Buffalo really understand it's a substandard facility as a facility. And what we're getting across the street is not a substandard facility. It's a Cadillac. You know, it's been well thought out, some of the things they're putting in, the right down to the wind patterns and everything. And it's just time. These stadiums go up in all these different cities. Why can't Buffalo have one too? And I do think people, I've not been in it. I've not been in the new one at all. I think people, just from seeing all the plans, are going to be blown away by what they have now that is going to become theirs.
I've heard from somebody who basically very close to the operations of the arena, who said that as much as they're proud of what they did to renovate the arena, the locker rooms and that type of thing, that what's going on out there for the new Highmark Stadium is incredible.
Right.
It just leaves everything else in the dust. Now, I think I have three games that I recall at Highmark or events there that stick out for me. And number one was the arrival of Jim Kelly.
Yeah.
As he walked down the tunnel and there's that NFL film clip of him coming down in slow motion and they cut to a sign on the wall that says Kelly is God. And because that really was the beginning of that whole Super Bowl run. I mean, it took a couple of years for them, obviously, to get there. But the arrival of Jim Kelly, we instantly, on his first drive, he took him down for a touchdown.
Right.
They lost that game to the Jets, but it's still, it showed that there was hope.
Right.
There was hope. The second one was the 51-3 game. Mm. And I was in the press box, and we were all... if you remember, there was only 1 week between the championship games and the Super Bowl games.
Yeah, to make your travel reservations
right.
quick.
Well, we had, you know, Channel 7, which we sent, I believe we sent 16 people.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that we were, if they won, we were leaving like at dawn,
right,
to get to Tampa. So that was the second. And the third was the greatest comeback game, which was blacked out. And there's so many people say, oh, I saw that game. Well, you've seen it so many times in highlights, you remember it. But that stadium was not packed for that game. Right. They had just gotten drubbed the week before by Houston in Houston. And so anyway, those were my three memories of those games. I also saw the Rolling Stones there in the 70s. I think I saw the Doobie Brothers. There was a couple concerts I went to when I was young and foolish and had a great time. So the new stadium, I don't know, it's 60,000 people. I believe that Highmark, there's been a change. Nobody likes to talk about it. Certainly the Bills aren't going to talk about it. But when they reduced it from 80 to 70,000, the home field advantage, the noise factor, to me, was different. It's just not as loud because you have 10,000 less people. And among the 70,000, many of those are now indoors.
Right.
Whereas back in the beginning of the, you know, the Super Bowl era, the 90s, everybody was sitting outside. I mean, you knew there was 80,000 people in that stadium.
Now, the biggest thing, though, I see is that the intensity level is still there. It may not be as loud numbers-wise, but there's no question the way the NFL right now, so many of these places have gotten so corporate, the Bills still have perhaps the premier home field advantage in the league. Lambeau Field, what else? I mean, it's still an amazing atmosphere. These players talk about it routinely, what a difference it makes. And you do feel like they're ahead by a touchdown a lot of times before the ball is kicked off. Will that translate across the street? I don't know. We're going to have to see. Most of the time, it's not as crazy when you go to a new stadium with more premier areas, more restaurants, more clubs. We'll see how it goes. I just think the passion of Bills fans is so high that home field advantage is really never going to go away.
They tell me acoustically the stadium will make up for what you don't have in the stands because the way it's enclosed.
Yes.
And you saw in Hard Knocks, Terry Pegula explain how the wind's not going to be a factor.
Right.
Which I think is great because Josh Allen's got a strong enough arm to throw in the wind. True, but I don't need anything to alter his performance. Let it be at 100% and not have to overcome another factor to be Josh Allen. Buffalo Bills. I watched Hard Knocks the other night. I thought the third one was a bit boring to me. I think maybe it's because this is for a national audience. If you follow a team every day, we did Tuesday night, you've already seen, you've heard, you know, Ed Oliver with his horses, you know, the whole thing. I really thought the way they lightly handled their drubbing by the Bears. I mean, you had Sean McDermott talking about how getting better and being aggressive and everybody has to try to get better, and then the program ends with them getting blown out on the road. So, Mike, you've been around for 1,000 years. Should we worry one even iota about that game?
No. You know, and I think Hard Knocks is struggling because it'd be much better to have a Hard Knocks during the regular season. The preseason, how much can you get crazy about? Here's the thing to me, Bob. Let's go back, and some people aren't even young enough to remember. What did we used to call it 30 years ago? It used to be called Club Marv. What did that mean? The preseason didn't matter. Go look at the Super Bowl years. They rang up some 0-4s in the preseason. I don't ever remember the Bills playing as few starters in the preseason as they're doing now. I would have liked to have seen a few of those guys get in there for a quarter. I think the way the NFL is right now, you just can't play your quarterback at all. Josh can't play. You cannot risk an injury. And they had the joint practice, and Lance Lysowski wrote a story in the paper about why hasn't Josh played, what are they doing? And they actually got more out of playing Josh in a controlled environment in the practice against the Bears than they would in a preseason game without the risk. I would like to see some of those offensive linemen get in. I would have liked to see some of those receivers get in, even if Trubisky's the one throwing to him. I'm a little concerned about that, but you know what's going to happen, Bob? They're going to tee it up against the Ravens, and let's say they get their doors blown off in Tampa again. You tee it up against the Ravens, you go win. What was the preseason about anyway? You know, I just think the NFL preseason has become a complete waste of time for the most part, especially for a team like this. There's no quarterback competition. There's not a lot of competition for a lot of spots. If you were picking your 53-man roster to start a camp, you probably could have picked 47 of them right in.
Right.
So with this team at this time in their history, it's really a non-factor to me. Losing 38-0 isn't great. Would have liked to have seen a few players. Just get ready for September 7th.
So tell me what you think about this. So, okay, so Fox puts it on in prime time.
Yeah, unbelievable.
People, you know, season ticket holders are still paying for these games.
Yeah.
What about the quarterbacks, the starting quarterbacks playing, but wear a vest, just like in practice? Once you touch the quarterback, the play's dead. Would that be so terrible? I mean, it's preseason.
You know, I've never really thought about that.
Aha.
Uh-huh. See, that's why you're the aged seer of Western New York media.
Just old. Well, no, but think about it, right? Would Fox have loved to have Josh Allen play like a half of that game?
Right.
Of course.
Of course they would have.
Everybody would have loved to see it.
I just think that, you know, we're at the point in history. I think this team, this Bills team, is taking the preseason less seriously than most other teams for the reasons I just said. I think most teams, there's competition. They want to get their quarterback in sync with the linemen. I mean, at this point, we understand where Josh is, where the offensive line is. So the Bills are a little bit of a unique case. You just don't ever like seeing them lose a game 38-0. So I know that made McDermott a little squirrely, I would assume. And let's see if a few guys get in there in Tampa.
I'm a little concerned about the opener, and I'll tell you why. This team, last year, they did not come out of the blocks fast against the Cardinals. They were down 17-0. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the year before, they were with the Jets and at New York. They lost that game in overtime, didn't play well. They played well. Remember when a couple years ago, they had to play the Rams in L.A., coming off the Super Bowl win. And the Bills really turned it on in the second half and blew them out at home, which was impressive. But I think you can't help but if you don't play in real game competition, you're going to be rusty coming out of the blocks. Maybe the Ravens have a little bit more impetus to play well after having lost their place. I don't know.
Here's the point to me, Bob. At some point, aren't the Ravens going to figure it out against the Bills? Aren't the Ravens going to stop shooting themselves in the foot? How many times are the Ravens going to beat themselves in Highmark Stadium? At some point, Lamar won't throw the bad
Jackson,
pick.
Yeah.
He won't throw the bad pick. At some point, they won't have the key drop pass like they had in the playoffs last season. At some point, the Ravens are going to figure their game out and say, enough is enough. We're going in there and winning a game. And it does concern me that this game is week one for that reason.
All right, we're going to switch gears to your beloved Buffalo Sabres. You're a reporter. I know you don't root for the team, but you can't help but be, you know, feel like it's much easier to cover a team when they're successful, isn't it?
You know, Bob, I always say you don't want an 82-point team. You want a Stanley Cup contender or you want a tire fire. And we've had a lot of tire fires around here the last
one self-imposed.
Years. Right, you know.
So I said this to you before we started recording. There was a time, of course, when I was at the Empire Sports Network. I mean, I was literally at every home game.
Right.
Don't call it work. I was kind of whining, dining clients and whatever. Sometimes I had a chance to bring the boys with me.
I never got an invitation to those wine and cheese parties.
They weren't wine and cheese party. We did much better than that in those suites. It was Adelphi Communications paying for them, which we won't get into all of that. But anyway, but I have not, I mean, like, unfortunately, like a lot of fans, over the past number of years, basically under Pegula ownership, I've kind of lost the affection of, like, living and dying with every game. And now my sister Sue, who I'm sure is watching this podcast, still loves and lives and dies with the Buffalo Sabres. Will they be better this year, Michael?
All right, Sue, they're going to be better. But that doesn't take a lot to be better than last season. But, yes, here's the point, Bob.
Why?
To me, last season, we analyzed these things to death. It's 82 games. We're on the road traveling to every game. It was real simple last year. If you look at a lot of the numbers, they were okay. People don't realize, oh, I lost 13 in a row. Yeah. They got no saves. If they got some saves, last year is a completely different story. They were 10th in the league in goals for the whole season. Who led the league individually in 5-on-5 goals last year? Tage Thompson. You know, their power play was around 30% for the last 2 months of the season. It was a tire fire at the beginning of the season, the first half, sure. But here's my point. You can't get anywhere if you're 29th in the league in goals against. And a lot of that is defense. Now the defense has improved. But a lot of that is goaltending. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen did not have a good year. Excuse me. See, I'm all choked up by it. However, he was pretty good 2 years ago. So which season was the outlier? I don't know. We'll find out this year. And they brought in Alex Lyon, and if Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's off to a bad start, he's out. Alex Lyon's going in.
To me, it's very simple in a lot of cases what happened last season. There were some injuries. You know, the losing streak, terrible. That's on the GM. It's on the coach. It's on the players. Let's not forget, Rasmus Dahlin missed 9 of those 13 games. That makes a bit of a difference, too. But everybody has losing streaks. Everybody's injuries. Figure it out. They didn't figure it out. But through the season, you go through a lot of those losses. They didn't get any saves. And, you know, sometimes people say, correctly, Robin Leonard once threw this to me, you guys are all spoiled because you had Hasek and Miller here all the time. I say, you're right. You know, but most teams that get places have a goalie. The Edmonton Oilers are an outlier. Of course, the Edmonton Oilers have two of the greatest players in the world on their team skating. That kind of cuts away some of the gap of the goaltending problem they have. But other than that, most of the time you've got to have the goalie. I still believe that Lukanen can be there and be a decent goalie in this league, but we'll see.
How much of this, first of all, how much pressure is on the front office that this team get off to a decent start? You think, I mean, are they on the hot seat?
Adams gets fired right away. Excuse me, Bob. Jarmo Kekalainen would be your GM quickly if they got off to a bad start. You know, they need to have the kind of start they had last year. They started 0-3. That caused a lot of panic, but they figured it out. They were in a playoff spot at Thanksgiving, which everybody forgets. It's a unique team. There's never been a team in the league under this kind of pressure in this kind of circumstance in the history of the league. They've missed the playoffs 14 years in a row. Now, none of these players have been here for that.
Right.
But they bear the burden of it. And no one else in the history league had ever missed the playoffs more than 10 years in a row until they set this record. So they're blowing this one out of the water. And right now, it's on ownership. It's on the GM. It's on the coach. It's on ownership the most. He's the only one who's been here all 14 years. But they need to simply eliminate a lot of the pressure. If they get off to a good start, they don't need to be in first place in the division. Just be competitive, be in the playoff hunt, be on the playoff list when you get to November. You can just play your season day by day. You don't have to turn your season into crisis mode in October. If you start the season 1-4-1, you instantly have crisis mode. And the Sabres don't do well in crisis mode. They have a lot of these little flare-ups during a season. Just get there. And that was the frustrating part of last year, too. When you sweep that California road trip, you go to a week before Thanksgiving, you're in a playoff spot. You're third in the Atlantic Division, and you just completely implode the entire season. And by Christmas, you're out of it.
What was the long-lasting effect of the tank year? How long did that haunt this team, this franchise?
Well, in some respects, you could say it still haunts them. Because, first of all, I was the most ardent anti-tanker out there. And even I could admit, in that particular situation, in that particular year, it probably should have worked, okay? Because there's never a guarantee. Everybody's talking now about, oh, which teams are going to tank for Gavin McKenna. It would be crazy to tank for Gavin McKenna now because you have an 81% chance of not getting Gavin McKenna, whether you tank or not. In 2015, the Sabres had a 100% chance of getting Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel if they finished last because of the rules of the time. So they end up getting Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel if they finished last. The lottery went against them, so they got Jack Eichel. Okay, build your team up around Jack Eichel. Can Jack Eichel be Connor McDavid? He's not Connor McDavid. He's not Connor McDavid now. He's also one of the probably 10 best players in the league. He's also won a Stanley Cup. He's also become a tremendous two-way player, which maybe we never anticipated there. They needed to build around him. They needed to get other prospects. They needed to be patient. Tim Murray wasn't patient. You know, and he brought, you know, I love he brought in Ryan O'Reilly. Don't bring in Evander Kane. You know, just a bad guy in your locker room, a bad move, really good player. Well, let's not forget, Evander Kane had multiple 20-goal seasons for the Sabres. They had Sam Reinhart already. It just didn't work. They were impatient. Some of their prospects didn't pan out. Murray's trades didn't pan out. And then the problem is you started playing revolving door with the coach and the GM, and that's on ownership. You know, you could easily make the case they fired Dan Bylsma a year too early. Murray wouldn't fire him. Murray wanted to get more defense. So he wouldn't fire him. He got fired, too. They fired Botterill a year too early. You know, he probably deserved to go another year. But now they've gone the other way, and Adams has been here too long. So a lot of that is on ownership. And like I say, who's been here 14 years? Not the coach, not the players, not the GM. The owner has.
The craziest one to me was when they fired Pat LaFontaine before he did a thing.
Right. You know.
I mean, it seemed like they were about to embark on, okay, we've got all our dominoes in place. And there's a couple, I've heard a couple of stories as to exactly what happened. But a beloved player who seemed to have had his finger on the pulse, and they showed him the door.
And here's the biggest thing to take away 12 years later. Terry Pegula has trust issues. He will not ever hire a president of hockey operations, which is what he needs exactly. In the wake of firing Pat LaFontaine, there's never been a president of hockey since. Now, Jarmo Kekäläinen is there. He's not the president of hockey. He's the senior advisor to the GM. Terry wants that line directly to the GM. Terry's too involved. I would say to Terry, if I was doing an analysis, and I've said this in the paper, and you analyze this team, you're the owner. You could sit there during the draft and free agency. You get out of the way. You hire people. You hire hockey people to put this thing together. You get out of the way. Your opinion on a right winger from Kamloops isn't going to matter. We don't care. We just want to know, what's the budget? How much do we have to spend in payroll? That's all. That's what you're here for. You're here to sign the checks, tell us what the budget is. He's way too involved in certain things. You know, Kevin Adams, everybody talks about palm trees and taxes. That wasn't the most important thing from that press conference. That was the social media and TV clip. The most important thing was when he publicly said he talks to Terry every day. Should not be talking to Terry.
Well, I mean, we were talking about the Bills. He's talking about Hard Knocks. You see, Terry Pegula is right there.
Every day.
He's standing next to McDermott. He's sitting next to Bean. I mean, he's very involved with the Bills, who are having great success. So he, in his mind, it's like, well, why wouldn't I do that with my hockey team, right, who I bought first, right?
Right. And he's the one he pushed hard for Mahomes. They didn't take him. McDermott didn't take him. He pushed hard for Josh Allen. You can find the clips of all the fans being mad the Bills took Josh Allen. Who wanted Josh Allen? Terry Pegula wanted Josh Allen. So, you know, we give him that. But you know what? Maybe he would think doing the same thing over and over again is the definition of insanity, Bob. Maybe try it a different way. It's 14 years. You know, part of me says we're lucky we're in this era of the Bills. You know, could the Bills have been the Sabres too? I mean, we were sitting there with Rex Ryan for a while. How well did that go? Then he hires a first-time head coach who brings in the first-time GM, and he drafts the quarterback a lot of people say he shouldn't have drafted. Boy, a lot of things went right for the Bills. Let's not overlook it here.
If they both went wrong, we could have brought out those old bumper stickers. Remember, go Bills, take the Sabres with them?
Right.
Because we've gone through those eras. All right, so Buffalo Sabres. Now, before I forget, which happens to me a lot, the arena. Will we get a new arena? We're building a new football stadium. Will we get a new arena?
No, absolutely not.
Will they renovate
this
arena?
You don't need a new arena. You don't need a new arena. You need to do what every other city basically that built an arena in the 90s and 2000s has done. You need a total rethinking, a reshaping of your building. You need to do about $300 to $400 million worth of work. Now, you would have already started on that process if a different person owned the Sabres.
Right.
Because Terry went to the government, got his money for the football stadium. Well, Joe Jones, Sabres owner, would have gone to the government with his hand out, said, I want my money too to do the arena. The unfortunate part is it's the same owner. And they've just made it very clear that they're not doing the big push on the renovation of the arena until the stadium is up and running. But it's going to become a hot button issue in that 2026-27 era. And frankly, the bones of the arena are fine. Hockey-related issues. The ice-making system is relatively new. It was put in. The locker rooms, you know, the media areas, a lot of those things are fine. What we need to see with KeyBank Center is a rethinking and a reshaping and a renovation of most everything fan-related. That's what they've fallen completely behind on is, you know, the darkness of the 300 level. Open that up. Get some glass. Get some windows. Get some views of the lake. You know, go to Pittsburgh, go to Las Vegas, go to Philadelphia, see what they've done with their upper decks. You know, you need, obviously, the whole world knows, why can't they rip the seats out? Well, they should rip all the seats out. They will. But they don't want to do it yet if they're not going to have 19,000 seats in their renovation, if half of their 300 level might become party areas, like we see in these different arenas, like Carolina is doing right now for this season. So they've got the architecture thinking about things here. But yes, I have no doubt. They're way behind. It should have been done years ago. They're the last 90s vestige arena to do it. They're going to need about $300 million worth of work here, and they'll get it done. And I think, you know, within the next 4 or 5 years, you're going to see a different place. And obviously, Bob, I traveled to all these places. So I walk around them.
Right, you see them.
I walk around them empty after the morning skate to check things out. And some of the work that's been done, you go to some of these places, they're completely different than they were 10 years ago. Not just Madison Square Garden. I throw that one out. They did $1 billion inside in over 3 years. But I'm talking, you go to places like Tampa and St. Louis and Philadelphia, and Nashville's doing work. Carolina, I haven't seen. They're doing a lot of work this summer, next summer. These buildings look completely different after these renovations. And I think we're going to see that someday at KeyBank Center. But that's not a consolation for the fans who sit in tight seats in the 100 level. And the concession areas look the same. And the floors are cracked. And my armrest is broken. The Sabres need to do a little more in the way of temporary fix-ups. But there's no new arena. They built Harbor Center, so that it's connected there. But it's just going to be a big renovation project over a couple off seasons.
We're both old enough to remember, but when they built the Marine Midland Arena, actually it was Crossroads first, right?
It was Crossroads was the name we all used.
Right.
Marine Midland was first.
They cut back on what was supposed to be the original plans. They ran out of money.
Mm-hmm. You know, things like, you know, if the second elevator to the press box was taken away. But, you know, I think there was supposed to be another floor of the parking garage. There was definite cutbacks made.
There was, I think, another 3,000 seats were supposed to be in there. Yeah. It was supposed to be like a 22,000 seat arena.
You know, but it was still, even in all that, Bob.
Oh, it's still a beautiful building.
When people forget, when it opened, and really for about the first 10 to 12 years, it was still considered one of the top arenas in the league. We still were going to Maple Leaf Gardens and the Montreal Forum and the Boston Garden and Joe Louis Arena. We had barns all over the league still. Reunion Arena in Dallas. There were a lot of barns in the other cities, and we now had one of these new giant arenas. And over time, everybody got a new arena. Look at what Detroit went from. Joe Louis, which I loved because I love barns. It's 900. You get a lot, Bob, for $900 million. Let me tell you, Little Caesars Arena is a palace. Now, the funny part is the Red Wings haven't made the playoffs since it opened. But, you know, you're not getting Little Caesars Arena. You're not getting T-Mobile in Vegas. There's no reason why KeyBank Center can't look like what they have in Philly or Nashville or St. Louis or a lot of these mid-level cities.
All right, it's my podcast, so I'm going to bore you with a story. One of my goofiest assignments. So when they opened the Marine Midland Arena, Empire Sports, of course, we were known for doing live events. It could go hours at a time. Just bring up the Buffalo, Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. And the night I emceed, they were inducting Marv Levy, and it went over 4 hours. He literally fell asleep at the dais. But anyway, so we were doing the grand opening of the Marine Midland Arena. Tim Russert was brought in from NBC, a Buffalo native, to emcee the whole event from a stage down on the floor. And Brian Blessing and myself were the two hosts in tuxedos for the whole live production, like the Academy Awards. And we would throw it down to the floor, and every team that was going to have some presence in the arena was come out on the floor with cheerleaders and music. And there was entertainment. And Ani DeFranco sang a song with Ellen Regis, John's daughter. And they wanted me to introduce the Big Four, the basketball teams. So I had to throw a jumpsuit over my tuxedo, run down to the floor, and come running out. I jogged out to the stage trying to hide my bow tie under this stupid sweatsuit I was wearing. And I got up on stage, and I get all the way up there, and the music's playing, and the mic's not on. So Tim Russert has to reach across the stage and hand me a live mic. And I brought out the four basketball teams and Jack Armstrong at the time. And I'm trying to remember who was maybe
it was John Beilein, Tim Cohane, Jack Armstrong, and Jim Barron.
There you go. I don't know if they all jogged out, but I remember we introduced the teams and the coaches. And it was a big to-do. But I think I still have that tape somewhere, and it's never probably going to see the light.
Here's another arena story for you, Bob. When they were building the arena, Larry Quinn gave me a private tour because the college basketball was going to be a big deal, and that's what I covered. He said, "You want a tour?" I said, "I'd love a tour. I'd love to see what's going on." So we're in the arena. We're going to the different things. And I looked at him. I said, "Larry, how are you going to bring 18,000 people in and out of the same entrance? That's not going to work. That's crazy." And he said, "Watch. It's going to become the greatest gathering area in the city after a game." And what happened in 2006 and 7? The Sabres all talk about the noise. What happened in the 90s? They all talk about the noise in that pavilion when the game ends and the fans are leaving after a big win. It's a celebration. And Bob, let me tell you, even to this day, There's very few arenas that have that pavilion like that. It's still underutilized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Edmonton has something like that. Toronto's trying to get something like that. Very few have that kind of ability. And that was a defining feature of that arena. And they just need to rethink when everyone comes in the building, they go through that pavilion, they go upstairs, up those escalators. When they get up to the top of those escalators, what do they see? What do they do? That's, to me, the real defining moment for the entire renovation of that building.
I know there's, and I don't know how many events were limited by this. I know that there was a time where the NCAA wrestling championships wanted to come to Buffalo. There was not enough floor space.
Yeah.
Because those seats don't move back. They're permanent seats around the,
right.
Which is basically the hockey configuration. Michael, it's great talking to you. We'll have you back. You've been around. It's great to talk to guys. You're not as old as I am, but
no.
You know your history. You know your history. Wait, you didn't have to be so definitive when you said no.
Well, you know what? The thing is, I am getting a little weirded out now. I am in the retirement of the great Mark Gaughan. I am now the senior member at the Buffalo News. That's a little weird.
Well, it happens to the best
it
of us.
It happens to all of us, right?
And you've had some great ones there. You've had some great ones.
Legends.
Yeah. We're going to have you back. I want to thank you for coming out. I know you don't mind eating at Chef's, do you?
We love Chef's.
You've had a few meals at Chef's.
I've had a few meals in this room even.
Lindy Ruff is trying to get the players to come back to Chef's because they all have their own personal chefs now.
I mean,
no pun intended. They, you know, it's not like the old days where they would come here and grab their lunch, go home, take a nap, and then show up for the home game.
Mm.
Anyway, so you'll get a nice gift card for being my guest today on Enough Said with Bob Kaczynski, and you can enjoy a lunch before you leave here today. So thanks so much for coming out.
All right, Bob. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's great to see you. Great to have you running a podcast.
Yep. Well, it's fun. I'm having a good time. We're getting a good response in our next episode. Our good buddy Howard Simon and Brenda Lacey, who has been around this town for many years, are going to talk about Fan TV and the Empire Sports Network. And we might even, we'll have some Bills talk too. So we'll see you then. Until then, have yourselves a great night and a much better tomorrow.